can be an extraordinary adventure. More than ordinary. In the gym. At home. At work. More than ordinary. Advice. Without the new agey bullshit.
Welcome to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm Anne Maria DeMars.
And joining us today is the multi-talented Justin Flores. Justin is both a graphic designer and a MMA coach and a judo athlete and all sorts of amazing things.
So I'm just going to jump right in, Justin, with Cause and Trouble here, because that's one of the things I do best. And we were talking earlier when I mentioned that I almost never hire anyone with experience in judo. In fact, while people say, oh, judo, martial arts are good for discipline, I've often found it to be the opposite effect, that it's maybe good for young kids if they're going to go and compete in tournaments. But for people who have been nationally ranked in judo, I see it as an ability in general to achieve something that's recognized at a high level with a mediocre level of effort. For example, a lot of people, you know, but a lot of people listening maybe don't know that you could win the junior national championships by being first out of two or three kids that are 11 years old and 150 pounds and over. Or you could win the senior national championships by being first out of seven people. So your first round, you got a bye because there was an uneven number and you lost your second round. And then you won your third round. So you basically won one match and you're bronze medalist and then senior national championships and you're a ranked player and on the points list. And I find that those people come into the workplace with a sense of entitlement. I'm good. I'm great. You should treat me special. Look at me. I'm one of the nationally ranked judo players. And yet they haven't worked that hard and they haven't achieved that much. And I don't want that attitude in our company.
Yeah, well, first off, I want to say how I'm happy to be part of the exclusive group that you deem qualified to be involved in not only artwork for you, but coaching your daughter and doing all these amazing things. And I feel like sometimes that a lot of these judoka that come into the workplace that don't have much of a blueprint to be able to be qualified in much other than doing judo at a mediocre level, where their stats maybe have been inflated because judo's not that popular in the US and they go to these tournaments that are called nationals and they medal. They feel like they're entitled to all these things. Like they start GoFundMe accounts to give them money to be able to win the Olympics when in reality, they wouldn't crack the top 500 in their weight class in the world. So a lot of times they have to create their own bubble of reality to kind of trick themselves into believing that they're better than they are. Because a lot of times you go into the workplace in the world, which happened with me, and I was a little lost after competing and not knowing what I really wanted to do. So I had a little trouble finding my way. And once I did, I felt like I used all those elements of lifetime of competition to be able to propel me into like a good work ethic. And I saw a lot of my friends that I was friends with on the tour competing in international judo not doing that. And a lot of times it was hard to kind of feel like we had much in common after a few years because they were still going back to that well of, okay, well, I'm going to try and come back and do judo, or I'm going to coach a few players and they're going to do really well and I'll be able to take credit for them. And it kind of left me like, that's what you want to do with your life still? I mean, you don't really have your own personal goals where you want to be successful in, you know, reaching your potential and whatever you feel like that's what you've been put on this planet to do. And a lot of times they don't have answers for that. So, you know, I had to kind of look inward and find out what I really wanted to get out of this life rather than live off of accomplishments that weren't all that great and try and pump myself up to being more than I really am or was. So it took some time, though. It definitely took some time.
Well, and you are kind of the anti-stereotypical both athlete and artist. I mean, these are things where especially people are, you know, chasing the Olympic dream. A lot of you hear about them being incredibly poor, you know, and doing those kind of things. And then also being an athlete, being an artist. Again, same thing, starving artist, you know. And here you are, you took a career both in sports and in art. You're actually working in both areas right now, and you've been successful. And why do you think you have been able to do that?
So I think when I first started wrestling I think that's where it started, where I kind of broke the mold more in that, because that's not considered as much of a martial art, or the word art isn't even in it. It's more a brute force, impose your will kind of thing. And I didn't see the sport like that at all. I saw it a little bit more of in art itself, fluid movement. And then when I got to college, I had to choose a major, and I chose being a Bachelor of Fine Arts because I was really talented at drawing. At least that's what I really like to do.
And did people just look at you like you were crazy?
Totally. Like I might have been one of six guys that were in, you know, that field of being your major. And it was pretty an exclusive group, because I remember at the time when I chose that major, there was an extra semester of school that you would have to do to be, you know, a Bachelor of Fine Arts major and degree. So I decided to do it. And my wrestling coaches, they understood, because I drew all of them like family portraits, and I was really just into geeking out on the drawing. So I find that from an earlier age, I always liked to draw, and my parents always like were supportive of that. They didn't think of that as something that was going to hold me back in life and starving artist kind of cliche. So I kind of used that, and I made a lot of connections just through a lifelong of competition, traveling, having teammates, meeting people. And when it was time to kind of finish with my sport and athletic endeavors, I found that a lot of people needed work for artists to do. So I kind of fit right in, and I didn't have that much lag time between trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I already knew what I wanted to do. And I had both of those, the hobby of art and the athletic side to me. And I kind of merged those into one thing, where I still, to this day, I have those two that I kind of make a living off of, where I'm teaching judo, jiu-jitsu, wrestling, MMA, and I'm being a graphic designer full time. So I get the best of both worlds. I feel like I'm sitting stagnant for 7 hours, and then it's time to get up and move and be on the mat. So I get to still do what I love, and in a way that I can make a living.
So for those of you listening who maybe don't know, Justin Flores, who is too modest to say, so I will say it for him, he was a Division I wrestler, NCAA. He went to the University of Nebraska. He also was on the world team for judo for the U.S. a couple of times, alternate to the U.S. Olympic team, won the U.S. Open. He also coaches my lovely daughter, Ronda Rousey, in MMA, in the judo portion of it. So he's got a lot of expertise in that area. He also has a degree from Menlo College, right, in fine arts. He wrestled some there, and then he also is the lead artist for Seven Generation Games. All the artwork you see, from the posters to the in-game art, he has done or overseen all of it. So he's got quite a bit of props in both areas. And then he also has done a lot of other artwork. For example, he and Rhonda designed a judo gi that they sold, and the money went to raise funds for breast cancer, one of those pink judo gis. So he's all over the map. But the other thing I want to say about art, just in case you're interested in getting a job with us at some point, is his art is all digital. So we almost never have people who just do the, you know, drawing on the boardwalk in Venice type of art. And so you had to go from being the kid that I would see around at judo sketching stuff, you know, when you're bored at camps, to actually learning a lot about computers and Photoshop and Illustrator. So how was that for you?
Yeah, that's a good segue from one world to the other. It took some time and some discipline, and I was pretty frustrated at sometimes, because I really felt that I couldn't cross over and there was too many limitations. And, you know, my wife was completely instrumental in having me think a little bit more positive about, enjoy this learning process, about changing your analog to digital, almost, where you're going to want to be able to get into the, you know, this is Justin 2.0 almost. You want to be able to use those skills, and you still have that great eye over, you know, what composition and balance and perspective, all these things that, you know, I learned in school, but I didn't learn in a digital media format where you could, you know, take it to all these, the Adobe software, basically, where you do Photoshop, Illustrator, InDesign, read some code and understand how to, you know, what files go where and how that kind of new world, it was really a difficult process for me originally. And then once I kind of opened my mind to enjoying that process and learning something new at a little bit older of an age, there was no looking back. Things became a lot more intuitive, where, you know, I would think something and then within an hour it would be on my canvas, which was now a computer screen. So it did take some learning and some carpal tunnel with clicking, but, you know, I was ready for that battle. And I looked at it just like any other, you know, training camp where I have, you know, a goal. I want to learn this and I'm going to do what it takes. And I think, you know, I could look back on that time where I was, you know, that was my starving artist time, where I really wasn't able to make money off of being a graphic designer, but I really needed to go over that hurdle of, okay, what do I have to do to become one? And, you know, it took some time and a lot of tutorials and asking questions and an internship at HBNM, which is a advertising agency in Philadelphia that I had for 4 months, which was instrumental in just learning the ins and outs of not only the software, but, you know, how to handle clients, how to handle accounts, how to be able to understand print versus web and all these different facets that I never would have understood. So I have a lot of people to thank for that. And the process was lengthy, but all in all, I'm really happy where it ended up.
Hey there, I'm Justin Scott.
And I'm Michael Smith.
And together we are Poorly Summer. Hey, I thought we were going to say that in unison.
Well, saying things in unison in a promo clip is like printing a flyer in Comic Sans.
But Mike, we had talked... Never mind. We're the hosts of Poorly Summarized, the podcast that fills you in on what you may have missed on social media this week.
You say that, but mostly we make fun of Donald Trump and right-wing nut jobs.
Whoa. I don't want to alienate our potential Trump supporter listeners.
Well, I do.
Well, there you have it. Poorly Summarized. You can find us on iTunes or wherever fine podcasts are enjoyed.
Hey, this is Matt Donnelly.
Hey, it's Paul Mattingly.
Of course, from Matt and Mattingly's Ice Cream Social, the comedy podcast that puts out 2 episodes each week.
Yes, if you guys would like to find out more about us, you can look us up at heyscoops.com.
We are recent winners of Best Comedy Podcast by the Podcast Awards.
Yes, and go and check it out. Give us a listen. We have a big backlog of old episodes for your listening enjoyment, dessert for your ears.
Our log is so back and so huge.
Oh, man, it's so big.
Hey, but thank you guys for tuning into More Than Ordinary.
Yeah, and right now, we take you back to
More Than Ordinary.
Your voice got real weird for a second.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there.
Welcome back to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm still Anne Maria DeMars.
And we still have with us Justin Flores. So this is the part where we talk about how to be more than ordinary. And one of the things that you had talked about when we were getting ready for this was what you wish you'd known, especially for this blueprint of what comes next, a life after sport. Although I don't think it necessarily even has to be after sport. It can be just after what you have put to be the defining part of your life. And then all of a sudden you realize, okay, you want to do something more, something else, something different.
I could go a lot of places with that question, but I think specifically for me, I started the sport of judo when I was really young, when I was 8. And at the age of 27, at the Olympic trials, things didn't work out for me. And I definitely, in my opinion, didn't reach my potential. And it was really hard for me to deal with that. It's just one day, it's over. And I had a lot of really high highs and a lot of really low lows. But all in all, I felt like I was a little lost. I didn't have like a set path of, okay, now it's time to get your job, get married, have kids, all those things. But there was something missing. It was, what do I want to do with my life? And I had, like we had spoke about earlier, about art and graphic design and being able to utilize those skills that I had acquired over years of practice into a profession. But at that point, I really didn't see things that clear. And I was more a little lost and depressed and kind of trying to figure things out. And I wish that, I mean, I had my parents, which are great, and they were really supportive. And they told me, you know, you could accomplish what you want and what you're great and all the things good parents do. But I really didn't have that blueprint where, okay, now it's time to finish my degree. Now it's time to get an internship. Now it's time to use those skills to get a job and how to negotiate for a good salary, how to do all those things that almost, I feel like more normal adults get that, where I was always just grinding, competing. Every week was a new challenge, trying to stay healthy, trying to make weight, trying to get to the next tournament overseas, trying to win those matches. So my goals were much different than mainstream people my age. So when all that all ended in my mid-20s, I saw my skills compared to a lot of people that were my age. And they had all finished school, have their master's degrees, have a family, where I felt like really lagging in those kind of normal, what society kind of tells you is where you should be with your life. So I wish that at one point in time, I had, you know, Bird whisper to me that, hey, be ready for what's going to happen after. Cause I was really a little bit had, you know, blinders on, which I get because I had a really high level goal and I wanted a medal at the Olympics. So I really was trying not to look outwards too much. So if anything, I wish that I had a little bit more, not support, but insight to what was going to happen after.
Well, and you had something that really resonated with me because you were talking about sport, but I look at it as I was writing for ESPN, which was kind of what had been my whole goal. And then one day I realized, like, I don't think this is what I want for the rest of my life. And there is a little bit of, I think, no matter what it is, whether it's sport or a job or switching industries or whatever, a little bit of fear and a little bit of depression because you're letting go of something that has been such a big part of your identity for a long time. And then even if you know you're ready and you want to do something else, this fear of, one, leaving behind what you've set to be your identity and a little bit, like you said, being a little bit depressed about that too, because totally. You really did love that part of your life.
Yeah.
How did you get past it?
Well, after being lost and a little scared, kind of like you, like scared of the unknown, like xenophobic, I didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't know where to even start. Okay. So my girlfriend at the time, who was extremely successful and motivated, tried to guide me, not by like telling me what to do, but, you know, supporting me. And I felt that I couldn't really be stagnant and be happy. I couldn't just wake up and lean on someone so much to support me. You know, like I have to go make my own way. And I think my rock bottom, so to speak, quote unquote, would be like, I was living out in Pennsylvania. I was with my girlfriend of 3 years at the time, and I had no job. I would wake, this is about 2 weeks after moving to Pennsylvania. I really didn't have much direction. And my mom had a good friend that was interested in having an artist create a whole line and series of children's books. So I contacted her and I explained how, you know, I'm really interested in this and I'm a good artist. I sent her some of my work and she loved it. And the next thing you know, we were sitting down kind of talking about the storyboards and how this would move forward. And it lit something up inside of me that I hadn't felt in a while, where even at the end of my judo career, I didn't even feel that anymore. I was more like, I owe it to myself to keep doing this judo thing because this defines me. This is my identity. So I owe it to myself. I owe it to my parents. I owe it to all these people. But really, I didn't have that love for the sport anymore. So it was really difficult for me to like function at a high level, trying to trick myself to believing that this is me. I'm the best in the world at judo.
There's that thing, and the French have a great saying, je ne sais quoi, which just means I don't know what. But there's that thing that makes you win. You know, people say that about me all the time, that if you watched me when I fought, I didn't have the world's best technique. Lanny Clark, a friend of both of ours, said, the thing that you and your daughter both have in common is that you both attack with wicked intentions. There's that thing that when your eyes pop open in the morning, you think, I got to win. What am I going to do? And I know how you feel like after the Worlds, I won the world championships. I didn't have that anymore. I knew it. I was done. And people say, don't you wish you went to the Olympics, you know, 4 years later? No, I went home. I married Ron. I had babies. There just comes a point when you don't have it anymore. And wise people walk away then. And you were very wise.
Yeah, it was a tough decision, though. I mean, I felt like I had all these titles to still accomplish because, you know, at some point in my life, I'd beaten all these people. So it should equate to this me being the best. But it just didn't work out that way. And for many reasons, some being injuries, some being poor choices, some being just dumb luck. You know, it just didn't work out. And I think it's all for the best. I have to say that, and I have to kind of swallow that pill, so to speak. But I think that, you know, I'm happy where it landed me. I learned to, you know, deal with loss, how to kind of be humble and not as we spoke about earlier, be that entitled person who only knows that they're, you know, judo third at the nationals, it gives them some kind of key to all the doors to get in and expect handouts and to be given opportunities that they don't deserve because, you know, they have an inflated sense of ego. I don't really want to be that person.
And it's funny because at the time people always say things to you like, well, this is for the best or it'll work out. Just wait and see. And you never believe them. But then years later, you look back and you're able to say, oh, looks like they were right.
Yeah. We wish people would have told us something and given us a blueprint later. Those are the small doses that, you know, I probably didn't even listen to because I was too upset with my own shortcomings to even let that affect me in a positive way. So yeah, there was plenty of those people when, you know, they give you the tap on the head and shoulder and say, it'll be better next time. You're like, whatever, I lost. I'm mad. So yeah, you're right.
It's that time again for shout outs. Drum roll, please. Okay. I don't have a drum. Sorry, but thank you very much to Melissa from Tennessee and Kelly from California for your game sponsorships in the last week. If you too could use a little extra karma in your life and would like to sponsor a child, classroom, or school with Seven Generation Games, go to www.7generationgames.com/buy. Thank you very much.
So I have a tip also very related to what Justin was talking about. And I think many people disagree with me on this, but that's never bothered me before.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a first.
And that is that I think it's a big benefit to athletes if they go to school and compete at the same time, if they work and compete at the same time. And people tell me, now, oh, no, you can't do that because you have to travel all over to Europe and it's not possible. But I did it. And I think it was a very big benefit to me. And I think it is maybe one reason that I avoided that trap you were talking about where so many athletes, not all of them, certainly there are people like yourself, there are people like me that go out and get real jobs and have lives, but so many of them turn into that guy in the bar that's 45 years old talking about when he scored the winning touchdown. Yeah, where they're 35 years old and they're at work and they're really upset because they're working as an intern or they're a junior level salesperson or whatever. And they're very irate because I'm the Olympic gold medalist in luge or whatever. And you guys should have more respect for me. And when I see something that somebody was the national judo champion or the Olympic medalist in skeleton, I think, wow, that's cool. That probably took a lot of work. But that doesn't make me think, wow, I want to hire that person. And I think people who have been within their little sphere and everybody's told them how great they were and nobody's ever told them, don't act like a jerk because they want to be the coach or they want to be hanging out with the person that wins the medal. That gives you a very distorted view. If at the same time as that, you're going to college where your economics professor does not care that you are on the Olympic team, or your boss wants that code done by Monday because it needs to be integrated with the rest of the game, or it's being used for inventory control in the factory, in my case, then you get a more balanced perspective.
Definitely. I think having real world skills is something that's really important, especially to get you prepared for life after. So I really respect those types that grew up doing judo that I know that always kept going to judo and competing at a high level, but yet were going to school and earning their doctorate and becoming, you know, using their skills that they have learned in judo, which is, you know, have confidence in yourself. These really primitive skills, not like they won by a shido in the finals of this tournament, which is very specific. Where it's like, there's only like a very little difference between that person and the person below them and the person below them. But the general skills of, you know, showing up to practice, understanding how to work well with others, being able to communicate verbally and non-verbally, those things that, you know, you're able to do, have respect for yourself and your partner and your opponent, all these things, mutual benefit and all the kind of adages that judo could build. I get that. And I really respect that to build a foundation for what I think is a good person. But to have the drive to understand that, you know, your time as a competitive athlete is limited and you have to be able to excel in something else, or not have to excel, but if you want to have those be successful, you have to kind of make goals that are bigger than winning matches. So I get it. I mean, when I was competing in judo, I was going to Menlo College for the second school I'd gone to, and I was bar backing on the weekends. I was taking a full course load and then some. I was training at San Jose State. I was doing graphic design on the side. I was like learning some skills. I was competing in Europe and Asia and still traveling and trying to make the most of my time, where some of the other athletes that were on those same teams with me were just, you know, living on someone's couch and competing and waking up at noon and doing the minimal amount of work to keep their slot as the U.S. judo athlete in that weight class. So they weren't developing those other skills. And I think a lot of times that plays out and manifests later in maybe not being as happy or having the job you want and being able to be a happy person in the long run.
Well, and you talked about basically this idea of soft skills, which is something we talk a lot about too, because we look at our games and we're like, yes, we want to teach math, but there's some of these things that gaming brings in that you can teach, resilience and perseverance and these kind of things. And I think that's a key part. And so being able to bring those soft skills that you've learned through your sport or through whatever other area is important, but then to actually have, again, these applicable real world skills. So, you know, you come into our office and we're like, hey, can you armbar anyone? That doesn't actually pay, at least not for us. But, you know, then have those soft skills and then actually have the real world tangible skills of, you know, graphic design or things like that. To be able to combine those two gives you an edge up against people who maybe, again, have the graphic design skills, but not necessarily the persistence skills and the organization to especially do it yourself through freelance or independent contracting, or when you're working for us and you're remote. That combination kind of gives you something.
So that's really important what you said about the intangibles. And my dad used to always make a good point about having paradigm paralysis, is where you're so stuck in not an ideology, but a routine and a sphere of like judo, or you could use any kind of demographic or any kind of like a group of organizational thinking, where if you're so in the center of it, that it's really difficult to see outside of it. And I think that kind of goes along with what we're saying, where if you're on the outside of that sphere, that bubble of understanding, that paradigm of thinking, you could see outside of it and see what works in other paradigms of thinking. And I think with respect to judo, where if you're so bogged down in the gritty of winning these little matches, which I understand you have to do as part of the game, but you're missing the bigger picture of how to kind of use the skills, those soft skills you spoke of, to be able to take those skills and use them in the future in any other endeavor, in you know, acquiring jobs, people skills, doing, you know, showing up on time, being proficient with your work time. Actually, like, having those skills, I think, is more important than hanging your hat on winning medals sometimes, where you could look at back at those and, you know, feel like you accomplished something, but really that's not helping you. It's not helping your family in the future. It's not providing, you know, putting food on the table a lot of times. So I think, you know, if you could extrapolate the best elements of, you know, being a full-time high-level athlete, I think those soft skills in the big picture are much more important.
It's kind of that realizing you're not the center of the universe, but there's a lot of other universes out there.
I think that's really important, because a lot of times, like a lot of these old friends I used to have, and some of them I'm still friends with and acquaintances with, they look at things like a kid would, where, you know, you're the center of the universe. You're the one who is always getting screwed over and the organization doesn't appreciate you and you're embittered. So you feel entitled to have what everyone else has instead of earning it. You like, oh, this guy's getting money or this person's getting attention. What about me? There's that scarcity mentality where it shouldn't be. There's enough for everyone. If you learn the system and you're smarter and you go about it in a way that's intelligent, you should be able to get the skills to be able to provide for yourself to get a job or to be, you know, a happy employee in whatever job you want to get. So I think a lot of times that holds people back, that negativity towards others that accomplish something and they're almost jealous. So they feel like they should be entitled to what that other person's getting rather than earning it themselves.
Thanks for listening to the More Than Ordinary podcast.
For more information, please go to our website, 7GenerationGames.com. And that's 7 as in the number 7, GenerationGames.com.
If you'd like to learn more about math and history, or increase your vocabulary while at the same time having fun, you can purchase our games at 7GenerationGames.com/buy.
You can also donate and help a much-deserving student.
And as always, please tell a friend and don't forget to rate us on iTunes.
It's never too late to be more than ordinary.